Get ready for Keeping It Real with Randy McMullen, brought to you by Amstar Mortgage Network and MLS number 148016. Stay tuned as Randy McMullen interviews realtors, credit specialists, closing attorneys, appraisers, insurance agents, home stagers, and others to prepare you for getting a mortgage and buying or selling a home. For more information, visit AmstarLoans.com. And now, your host for Keeping It Real, Randy McMullen.
So, Randy McMullen, there are some mortgage myths out there that we want to talk about today. Let's start with one that you and I just talked about a few minutes ago before we went on the air.
Yeah, Jeff, you know, a lot of these myths have been around for just years and years, and I guess they get handed down from generation to generation. And one of the ones that we hear most commonly is that if I make that one extra mortgage payment a year, I can cut, 8 or 10 years off my mortgage. I can turn a 30-year mortgage into a 20 or 22-year mortgage. And it really just doesn't work like that. You know, if you have a rate of 4.5% and you make one extra payment a year, it will only cut off about 4.5 years off that term. If you've got happen to be one of the lucky people that got a rate at 3.5, it only cuts 3 years and 9 months off the term. So they really don't cut that much off. So the question is, well, then where did that get started? And it got started back, I guess, maybe 20-something years ago, because when you got a rate of 10% and you make one extra payment a year, it literally knocks almost 9 years off the loan. And if you had a rate of 12%, it cuts almost 11 years off the loan. So it's one of those things that people have heard about for such a long time, and they, you know, just kind of passed it down, and it's really not as true as it used to be. And, you know, we tell people just to follow kind of an old axiom, which is when rates are high, borrow as much as you can or rather borrow as little as you can and pay it back as quickly as you can. But when rates are low, you really want to borrow as much as you can and keep it just for as long as you can. That's what the banks are doing, Jeff, and that's something that we kind of have to educate our customers about.
Nonetheless, we get these solicitations all the time telling us to add an extra payment every year, I guess.
Well,
it is.
One of the big industries—
Even with these low rates.
Yeah, one of the big industries that sprung up, Jeff, is companies that actually charge you to make one extra payment a year. They want you to do these biweekly mortgages, which is the same thing. Instead of making 12 payments a year on a biweekly, you end up making 13 payments. It does the exact same thing.
And people think they're paying down that mortgage, really.
They do.
Paying it down.
Most people have so many better options to do. You know, if you've got any interest money on a credit card, you're, you know, 16, 17, 18%, you definitely want to pay off all those credit cards. You might have a higher rate.
At a 20% or 18% rate,
yeah,
than a house with a 30-year term and a 4% rate.
Absolutely. So you want to get that, you know, your high-rate cards, any installment loans. If you haven't really fully funded your IRA, your 401k, put your money in that. That's a better investment. You know, the other thing is you want to build a nest egg. You want to build some reserves for that rainy day. And so instead of putting your money into your mortgage, we always tell people, gosh, especially at today's rates, you want to put money aside in a separate thing. And let me give you an example. I'll use a today's basic rate of about 4.5% on a 30-year mortgage. You know, one option you have is to make that one extra payment and pay your principal down. Let's just say you decide that you're going to pay $200 a month extra onto your mortgage every month, and you're going to pay it down. On a $200,000 loan, Jeff, that would knock your term down to about 21.5 years. So the good news is your home is free and clear in 21.5 years. Now, during that time, you're also going to get to write off a lot of interest. But because you accelerated the payment, you're actually going to get less interest write-off than you would if you just let your mortgage—
Because of amortization?
Yeah, because when you speed up your amortization, you have more principal and less interest. Now, the same person decided to take that $200 and stick it in a bank account, and let's not use, you know, 10, 12, 13%. Let's use a very conservative number. Let's say they can get 6.5%, and they stick $200 a month into that account, and in 21.5 years, how does that compare to the first option? Well, you get a lesser tax deduction if you put it in the mortgage, and if you put the money in a side account and you make 6.5% interest on that money, you actually end up having almost $112,000 in the account.
Wow.
Now, your balance in 21 years is $87,000. So you take the $112,000, you pay off the balance, you've got your mortgage free and clear.
You got 25 grand too.
And you got money left over. And you had a better tax deduction. So it really comes out about $26,000 or $27,000 better, even at 6.5%.
You know, I noticed that, Randy. I had a 15-year mortgage at one time. And after about, I don't know, 8-9 years, you know, when I was past the midway point, I started to notice that when I was getting my statement at the end of the year from the company, the mortgage company that had the loan, that the interest that I was paying was, the total amount of interest paid over the year was a lot less than it had been.
Yep.
And that was very disappointing to me because I always counted on that interest deduction.
Mortgage deductions are much better the first 5 years of the loan, and they get smaller every year.
I mean, hey, by the way, can I throw this at you?
Sure, have at it.
There's been talk, and I'd hate to see this happen, but I've heard people say that maybe the government's going to try to eliminate that mortgage deduction. Have you ever heard that?
There has been some talk, and there have been some bills in Congress that they've been talking about doing away with it. Now, there are a lot of different ways that they're talking about structuring that. And the one of the things they're saying first is, let's just hit basically what I'd call super loans, jumbo loans. Let's only hit people who are paying interest on loans over $1 million. And it's not a full-scale back of the interest deduction. It's just how much of that interest you can deduct. They're talking about lessening it. But, boy, you know, it's kind of one of those things, a very slippery slope, is once you open the door to start reducing it, well, now it's $1 million. And a couple of years down the road, they decide to change it to $800,000. Then it's $600,000. Now it's $400,000. You know, and once you open the door for that, it's a very slippery slope. And
ooh, those greedy rich people. And I always say that, though. You know what I mean? They're always trying to tax they're such bad people.
They got money. Let's go after them. They've got the deepest pocket. So it's the easiest target. And unfortunately, you know, some people will say, hey, yeah, let's get the rich to pay a little bit more of the tax burden. But, you know, is it fair? I mean, Congress is going to debate that right now. The National Association of Realtors, NAR, is fighting that. And they're a pretty strong lobby group. So it hasn't made any progress so far. But you never know what's going to happen down the road.
I agree with you, too. It's just like taxes. You know, once they impose a tax, it seldom goes away.
Very rarely goes away.
And it usually increases. Hey, let me just ask you this, too, because this begs a question that you kind of sort of brought up a subject. How long do you know, Randy, on average, how long do people stay in their homes?
It varies a little bit geographically nationwide. On average in the United States, the average time is just under 8 years. Atlanta is a little bit more of a transient town. So people in Atlanta tend to only stay in their homes for about 6.5 years on average. Now, I personally think that's going to change. I think when people had rates of 10-12%, and you know they might be more inclined to, you know, rates are back down to 7, let's go sell this house and buy another house. A lot of people that now have mortgages in the 3.5, 3.75, 4% range, they may not want to sell their house in 6 years if rates are 8%, because the cost of moving up would be huge. So I think there's a possibility that we may see longer times in the house, and that we may also see a boom in renovations.
I was going to say, good times for remodelers.
Remodeling, adding up, you know, finishing the basement, adding a bedroom. I've seen several clients who've decided to stay where they're at and add a floor, a second floor to the home. So you'll probably see more of that as time goes, and I would expect that length of time in the home may go from 6.5 to 7.5, nearly 8 years in Atlanta over the next 10 or 15 years, too.
I want to throw one more question at you, Randy McMullen, and then we'll move on. Because at Amstar Mortgage Network, do you get people to call you perhaps in December? Because this time of the year, it's kind of relevant. You know, we're at the end of the year. And do people ever call you in December and say, Randy, should I make a 13th payment, you know, one extra mortgage payment? I've heard people do that so they can get, you know, when they get that statement that I just talked about from your lender, you know, that year-end statement, you've paid even more interest and got a bigger deduction.
Well, you can. I'm not sure that it's going to impact your taxes, because the interest that accrued during the year, regardless of how many payments you made, is the amount of interest that accrued. So we do occasionally get that question. It isn't very often. But, you know, our advice is the same thing. What's your current interest rate? Okay, if you've got a 3.5% rate, what'd you make on your investments this year? When you ask that this year, you know, people light up. I made 28% this year.
Yeah.
Well, gosh, if you'd been putting that money in that 28%, how many years ahead would you be just from this last year? Now, I don't expect you'll get 28% every year, but a lot of times we just look at the situation, and if somebody's got $100,000 sitting in an account, it's different advice than we would give somebody who is a starting family, they got a couple of kids, and they haven't yet built off those reserves.
You know, I found, too, if you call the lender, let's say it's some big bank or something, or one of the big companies we all know, and you're going to get a customer service person, and you ask them the question I just asked you, like, should I make a 13th payment? They really don't know how to answer that question, you know? They might say, look, we'll send you an amortization schedule. You can look at it yourself, and you can make your own decision.
Yeah,
but they're not going to give you the kind of advice that you just gave me.
I think most of the bank's advice is, yes, make an extra payment.
Yeah.
You know, just whatever the question is, yes, make an extra payment.
Pay more.
It's always a good thing to get ahead. You know, but I want to talk about this liquidity thing for a second. If you take your money and you put it in a separate account, one of the things that happens, and I think a lot of people are going to relate to this. You've been paying on your mortgage for 5-6 years, and all of a sudden one of life's unexpected adventures comes up. You need some money for an emergency. You want to take it for any number of different things. You know, if you've been putting money into your mortgage and your asset base is sitting in your house, and you go, gosh, I want to get out $20,000, then you really have to come back to us or the banks and say, hey, I want to borrow $20,000. Well, we're happy to lend it to you, but if you'll think about this for a second, you're going to pay somebody a fee plus an attorney plus an appraisal plus underwriting to get your money.
You mean have a closing and all that again?
You got to close again. You got to have a second mortgage. And you're going to have to pay interest on, by the way, your money. It's your money. You're paying to get it. And then you're paying the banks an interest rate to use your money.
Right.
Now, if you set that money aside in an account, all you do is you go, if it's online, you make a couple of clicks. It doesn't cost you anything to get your money. And you get it, and it doesn't cost you anything in terms of interest to use your money. So you can make a better return. You got much better liquidity. It's just for most people in today's interest rate environment. This is where it's different. This wasn't true for people who took loans out 20 years ago. But today, with today's rates, it's better to put your money in an outside investment.
Mm. All right, we're up against a break. Folks, you're listening to Keep It Real, Keeping It Real with Randy McMullen from the Amstar Mortgage Network. If you want to reach Randy, you can visit amstarloans.com, A-M-S-T-A-R, amstarloans.com, or you can give him a call at 770-509-7827, 770-509-7827. 27, and we'll be back with more of Keeping It Real with Randy McMullen in just a moment.
And now back to Keeping It Real with Randy McMullen of Amstar Mortgage Network. Visit amstarloans.com.
And this is Jeff Davis with Randy McMullen from the Amstar Mortgage Network here in Atlanta. Randy, mortgage myth number two, the lowest APR is always the best loan. Why is that a myth? What's the matter with that?
A lot of people have just been trained again or heard over the years that, you know, just compare loans and whichever lender's got the lowest APR, that's going to be your best loan.
What does APR stand for?
APR stands for annual percentage rate. Now, the concept behind that was really to give consumers a tool to make a very simple comparison. So you could really, in theory, you were supposed to be able to look at the two APRs and go, this one's lower, this one must be a lower cost loan. The reality of that is because I represented a lot of different lenders. And at one point, I went back to 12 lenders. And I said, can you send me all the fees that you use to calculate APR, annual percentage rate? Lo and behold, guess what?
It varied from...
They didn't all count the same fees.
Wow.
So even though you might have had one lender with lower fees, they counted more of those fees. Another lender may have had higher fees, but they didn't count certain fees. So they came up with a lower APR. And it gets even worse. And here's a big thing. And again, people, if you don't know to look for this, you're just not going to. One thing that you get at every closing on a loan is called title insurance. There's actually two types. There's lender's title and owner's title. 99% of all buyers get the owner's title, and the lender's is required. So when you're buying a house and you're, say, it's a $300,000 house, you may get the lender's title insurance for $600 and the owner's title insurance is $800. Well, here's the thing. That $600 title insurance, that counts in the APR. So what's happened is some title companies have restructured how they quote title insurance. So instead of a $600 lenders and $800 owner title, they have a $100 lenders and a $1,300 owner's title. Now, only the lender's title is calculated in the APR.
The 100.
So instead of 600, you see 100. So literally, a lender could have $400 lower in fees, but because of the way that just the title interest is done from one attorney firm to another, it's very misleading about how that would work.
I never knew that. And they do this for the purpose of making the APR look as low as possible.
You know, I don't know why the title insurance companies do it. I just know that some do. So when we're quoting APR, you know, we have to know alone what attorney you're using. And we'll contact that attorney and say, hey, can you give us a quote for your fees? Because, by the way, did you know the attorney fee is also a part of the APR? It's considered interest.
Wow.
The title insurance is interest. The underwriting fee is considered interest. All those things are wrapped into the interest to calculate your APR.
And they're one-time fees, too.
They're one-time fees.
What is? I'm going to back up a second and ask you, Randy, what is the difference between the interest rate and the APR? Because I'll bet that most people don't know.
The interest rate is purely the rate you're paying on the money. That is the rate that you're paying on the amount of money you're borrowing.
Is that what we should be looking at? Well, go ahead and do the difference.
No, actually, it's a great question. The APR, the APR is the cost of the money plus the upfront cost. So the interest rate doesn't factor in the upfront cost. APR factors in the upfront cost. Obviously, if a lender said, hey, we're going to charge you an extra $3,000 in points, and lender B says, we have no points, but the same rate, well, no points at the same rate's a better deal, and that $3,000 would cause the APR to be higher. So, you know, a great question is, then how do I compare if I can't compare APR? Well, there's a couple things that you can do, and I advise clients to do this. Look, the fees that are on your loan, the attorney fee, the title insurance, the surveys, you know, any of those costs, the appraisal, those are going to be the same cost no matter who you work with. They're the same. The attorney doesn't, you know, charge X for this lender and Y for another lender. They have their set of attorney fees. So an easy way to do this is to, I like to get every lender on the same rate, and then I strip out everything, and all I look at are the lender fees, the rate and the lender fees. If everything else is the same, then all you got to do is look at, okay, what are the lender fees? Are there any points?
But it doesn't matter what the APR is then.
Doesn't.
Because it can vary according to how you decide to calculate.
No. And you know what? Here's the thing. People get so driven on this APR. Let's say that you had an option to get a rate at 4.5% with no discount points, no origination points, and that's loan option A. Did you know you can pay points and buy the rate down? Everybody knows you can always buy the rate down. Well, let's say you buy the rate all the way down to 4%. That 4% rate may have an APR of 4.45, and the 4.5 rate may have an APR of 4.55. So 4 ends up having a better APR. But you're borrowing $300,000, and it's going to cost you 5 points to get 4%.
5 points cash money up front.
$25,000.
Wow.
Or $15,000 on a $300,000 loan. Do most people want to pay $15,000 up front?
When you say points, you mean percentage points.
Percentage points, discount points.
No, I wouldn't want to
do that. No, people don't want to pay $15,000 up front to get a lower rate.
Well, pay as little as possible up front and amortize, put the rest of it in a loan.
Yeah, if you save $100 a month, but you spent $15,000 to get that, oh, geez, in only 150 months, you break even.
Wow.
And that's assuming you didn't make any interest on your $15,000.
Yeah, 150 months.
So every time we do a loan for somebody, we have to literally do the math to figure out what's the best loan. Now, let me give you another point. Let's say that you come to me and you say, Randy, I'm here and I'm working with the CDC. And I'm going to be here for 3 years, and then I'm transferring back out to wherever you want to go, California or anywhere. So you've already told me you want to be here for 3 years. Does that person want to pay points to buy the rate down? Heck no. They don't want to pay any points. In fact, they want as low a cost loan as they can get. So
he's only going to be in the house 3 years.
3 years. So we advise them, look, if the going rate is 4.5, you might want to take 4.75, let the lender pay $5,000 or $6,000 of your closing cost, and you save $6,000. Now, your payment goes up $50 a month for 3 years. Okay, it costs you $1,800 over the 3 years, but you saved $6,000 up front. The higher APR is the best loan for you. Mm. So we really have to look at a variety of situations, like how long are you going to be in the house? What are your cash reserves? What other financial objectives do you have? Do you need to have an extra reserve account? There's a variety of things that we have to look at for every single customer to determine what's the best loan for them.
All the more reason to go to Amstar Mortgage Network, folks, because you guys will really dig and do a lot of the things that I wouldn't get from other companies, quite frankly. Randy, I think you're too shy to say it yourself, but I'll toot your horn. This is very, very good information that we're getting from you, folks. We're up against a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about mortgage myth number 3. Folks, you're listening to Keeping It Real with Randy McMullen from the Amstar Mortgage Network. You can visit amstarloans.com, amstarloans.com, or you can give Randy a call at 770-509-7827, 770-509-7827. We'll be back with more of Keeping It Real with Randy McMullen in just a moment.
And now, back to Keeping It Real with Randy McMullen of Amstar Mortgage Network. Visit amstarloans.com.
And this is Jeff Davis with Randy McMullen. Randy, we've already talked about two of the three mortgage myths that you've described. You've opened up my eyes on both of them, actually.
Yeah, Jeff, I want to kind of finish up on a couple of things on that last thing, because the investment part is such a big piece of this, and there's a rule, just as kind of a general rule, called the rule of 72. And all that is you take the interest rate and you divide it into 72, and that tells you about how long it takes you to double your money. So if you were getting 7% on your money, you could expect that your money would double about every 10 years. If you're fortunate enough to get 12% on your money, you could double your money every 6 years. And if you got about 6% on your money, you would expect to double your money in about 12 years. So that's kind of a rule of thumb that people can use to figure out, you know, how their investments are going to work.
And with rates as they are right now, I mean, the chances are very good that you're going to make more money that way.
Well,
with the rule of 72.
When you're paying money at 4.5% and you're writing 35% of that off or so, your real net rate, what we call your after-tax rate, it's like 3.25%. So you got to ask yourself, can you beat that rate in the market?
Instead of with a mortgage.
Yeah.
So just if you took that money and independently invested it, you'd get 6, 7, 8.
You should be able to get 6, 7, 8. And, yeah, you know, talk to your financial advisor. They can tell you what historical numbers look like and what it's looked like over the last 7 or 8 or 10 years. And those are the things that you want to use to kind of as a guide. Plus, the other part of it, again, is that liquidity. I can't emphasize that enough. It's just so much better to have that money sitting outside your home for liquidity purposes and sitting inside. And
liquidity, meaning you can get to it.
You can get to it. You got full access to that money. And, you know, if you talk to a mortgage person and your mortgage person hasn't been asking you, you know, these questions and explaining these principles, boy, you need a new mortgage person. And honestly, I'd like to have that opportunity to talk to you.
You know something, I've refinanced several times and I've bought 3 or 4 homes over the years. I've never had a mortgage person explain it the way you did. Never.
It really, you know, we see ourselves as mortgage consultants. It's not, you know, we get the phone calls, what's your rate? Give me your best rate. And we're glad to give people our best rates because, as you know, we represent about a dozen different lenders and we've got really aggressive rates. But it's all about educating people about what is the best thing for them to do once you get beyond that.
Well, there's so much misinformation out there, it's sad.
There's a ton.
Myth number 3, I think, is apropos to this.
Myth number 3 is, we hear this, it's kind of, I guess I'm really surprised that we are still hearing this. And people will tell me, well, don't I need to save up 20% before I can buy a house? Or, you know, don't I need to get my credit score up to 720 or 740? Because, you know, I've heard that, you know, people with credit scores in the 600s are all getting turned down. And I'd like to address those in one simple word. Nonsense. Mm. That's just, it's we are doing loans for people with scores 620s, 640s, 660s, all up and down the spectrum. In fact, you know, FHA's program, you can do a loan with 3.5%, and we have lenders that can do that with scores down to 600 with just 3.5% down. And there's a great new conventional loan program out there that very, very few people know about. We were early on the bandwagon on this, and we've been telling everybody about it. But there's a conventional loan program that you can put 5% down, and it can be all gift money. It doesn't even need to be your money. You can get money, gift money from your parents, relatives, and you can get a conventional loan with 5% down. And now that program does require about a 720, but if you've got a regular conventional with your own 5%, you can get a loan down to 640, and we get those approved all the time, Jeff.
Because some people, I don't know how to describe this. They can't. They're unable to really show how much wealth they actually have, or they can't really show their income.
Right.
What am I saying? I've heard this.
Well, back in the day, what kind of got us in this is a lot of lenders started doing these stated income, stated asset, where you just had to tell us what your income was, tell us what your assets were, and we didn't document it. Today, everything is being documented. Now, on income, self-employed people is a real trick. And, you know, we have to do really a tax return analysis to be able to tell you what your returns are. You might have some W-2 wages on there. You might have some Schedule C wages on there. You might have something from Schedule E on there. And we have to go back and look at all the different components of your tax return, do an analysis, and come up with an income that an underwriter is going to use. And it's not the same income that you might think. And there are some other types of income, like Social Security. And people say, okay, I make Social Security. I get $24,000 a year. Well, if it's a non-tax Social Security income, we can gross that up by 25% and give you actually more credit than your actual income because you're not paying taxes on it.
Isn't it a shame, like, some people don't know these things, and so they don't even bother to try to perhaps refinance at a better rate because they think, well, I'll never be able to get past that underwriter.
I think that's in large part true. I think there's a general consensus out there that it's because people have heard how difficult it is to get a mortgage. And let's be clear. It is more difficult to get a mortgage, not because you can't qualify, but it's more difficult because the level of detail that we're going to have to ask you for. You know, Jeff, one of the things that they passed about 18 months ago was the anti-money laundering legislation. And before that point, we just put your assets in there and whatever the balance was fine. Now, we have to go back and look at every asset statement and look at every non-payroll deposit that's on your statement. And if there's anything significant, if you've got a $1,000 deposit that just shows up, we have to prove where that came from.
Wow.
And that means you've got to provide some background documentation. So it's not that your loan won't get approved, but you're going to provide more documentation to get it. So I just want to be clear to all the listeners out there that, you know, you can still get a loan with credit scores in the 600s or 700s or with 3.5% down or 5% down. You just need to make sure you're hooked up with somebody who knows how to get that for you.
And that anti-money laundering, the thing like we were just saying, like there's an extra $1,000 in your paycheck somewhere or whatever. And that this is all this legislation and all this extra paperwork because of a few bad apples.
Exactly. I got to tell you, when this first came out, literally, I think the first loan we got after that was a guy who had won $10,000 in his NFL fantasy league. Mm-hmm. And we were like, how do you document money from an NFL fantasy league? And we really had to go back and provide documentation that he was in the league and then he won the league. So, you know, it's not always the standard documentation that you think about. Wedding gifts, birthday presents. There are money from all sorts of sources, and we have to go back and document all that now.
Well, you see all sorts of things in your job.
We do. One of the ones that we like to see is lottery winnings. You know, I'll see a young couple. They won,
really?
Maybe not the $200 million, but they've won $25,000 or $50,000. And we document that, and that's their down payment on their house, and they're ready to go.
Wow, how nice.
Yeah, that's fun.
If you don't mind me asking, when you said about the 20%, this myth that you need to put down at least 20% to get a good loan or even get approved, what about private mortgage insurance? I remember one time I had a mortgage, and once I got to the point where I paid, where it was less than 80% now due or whatever, I could be relieved of having to pay PMI, private mortgage insurance.
Right.
Hope I'm stating this correctly.
That's pretty close.
What bothered me, though, is I had to write to them, to the loan company that had the loan. You know, I think it was a big bank or one of those big, huge national lenders. I had to contact them. I didn't get a letter in the mail from them saying, hey, congratulations, by the way, you're down below 80% or whatever it is, and we're protected, so you don't have to pay this PMI every month.
Yeah, and people don't
know
that.
Do they still have that, this private mortgage?
They do. They've changed the rules and how that works a little bit. I know that my parents paid mortgage insurance for 30 years simply because they didn't know that they could take it off.
PMI?
Yeah, PMI.
The reason I ask if it was PMI is because, well, you can buy like a life insurance policy that pays off the loan in the event you die. That's not what you're talking about.
No.
You're talking about 30 years worth of PMI?
PMI. Private mortgage insurance. And mortgage insurance is insurance for the lender. It's their insurance that if the loan goes bad, they've got some insurance to cover them down to a certain level. Now, the new regulation, the way it's handled now is this, is, and it's different for conventional and FHA. On a conventional loan, you have to put 20% down to avoid paying PMI. If you put 5% down, then through the course of normal payments, your standard regular payments, once you get down to 78% loan to value, you can contact your lender and ask them to remove the mortgage insurance. A lot of times it's built into their system. They will start to trigger it now and they will notify you that the mortgage insurance is coming off. Not all of them do that. So you'll obviously want to track that and keep up with it. In some cases, you can use the appraised value to remove the PMI. But that is at the lender's discretion. They do not have to use appraised value. So if you bought a house for $100,000, you put $5,000 down, and now you've paid the balance down to $90,000, and the house is now worth $130,000, well, you're clearly below that.
That lender's protected.
78. They're covered.
Isn't he?
They're covered. But they don't have to remove the mortgage insurance until you get down to $78,000 because the original sales price was $100,000. Then they have to.
Wow. Yeah, that's kind of regrettable. That's kind of sad. Although I guess their argument can be, well, we don't know who made this appraisal. We don't have to believe this appraisal. This was our deal with you.
Well, actually, you're using that lender's appraiser. If you want to get an appraiser, it's their appraiser list that you're using.
And they still won't
it's their option.
Let you out until you get down to, in that case, $78,000.
It is their option.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm learning a lot today. Randy, I got to tell you, buddy, I have learned more from you. And I'm not the stupidest guy in the world about these kinds of things. I know, you know, a decent amount about mortgages. I've had several over the years. I've refinanced. I've worked with a lot of people. I've never met anybody who's as knowledgeable as you and who conveyed as much to me as, a potential customer as me and the listeners are. We're all potential clients of yours. I've never had anybody explain it to
me. Well, you know, I appreciate that. I've had Amstar Mortgage for 11 years now, and I estimate that I read about 250 to 300 hours per year on mortgages, appraisals, titles. So with about 3,000 hours behind me, and gosh, a lot of it's relearning because it changes so quickly. So we're relearning a lot of this stuff too.
But there's one other very big important factor, and because I've gotten to know you a little bit now, Randy, and that is that you strike me as the kind of guy who's going to put the client's needs ahead of your own. It's just the way you are. You're going to come totally focused at them from a helping and caring perspective, thinking about them and their needs and what's best for them and not what's best for Randy McMullen.
We tell people sometimes that we'll get a call. I had a lady wanted to refinance. She had a 15-year loan. She'd been in it for 8 years. She had 7 years left, and she was getting calls about, you need to refinance. Rates are lower. And I told her, I said, look, you can refinance, but if you go back to a 15-year loan, it's going to end up costing you $30,000 to $40,000 to stretch that loan. It'll lower your payment, but you're taking a 7-year loan to 15-year loan. Hmm. My advice is that you not refinance.
And you could have had her as your customer if you wanted to.
She was my customer.
Low-hanging fruit right there.
Yeah.
All right, folks. You're listening to Keeping It Real with Randy McMullen of Amstar Mortgage Network. Visit AmstarLoans.com. Amstar, you got to have the word loans in there, folks, because I know there's other Amstars around the world. AmstarLoans.com or call Randy. He's happy to help you. 770-509-7827. 770-509-7827. And we'll be back with more of Keeping It Real with Randy McMullen right after this.
And now, back to Keeping It Real with Randy McMullen of Amstar Mortgage Network. Visit AmstarLoans.com.
And this is Jeff Davis with Randy McMullen. Randy, you know, in the last segment, you talked about your parents paying private mortgage insurance all those years unnecessarily. This is before you were in the business. Obviously, you would have intervened and done something about it. You talked about how you helped the woman who only had 7.5 years left in her mortgage, and all these people are trying to tell her to refinance, and you did what was in her best interest rather than your own. You told her to stay with what she had. But unfortunately, you know, your industry does not enjoy a very good reputation, and people are very suspicious, understandably so. You know this, Randy.
Oh, yes.
I mean, all of you guys, you know, because of a few bad apples, and you were talking about the anti-money laundering legislation. Just gives me chills even just thinking about that kind of thing, you know, I think of some drug dealer or whatever. But is this something you have to deal with, being in your business all the time? People kind of, you know, coming at you with one hand, you know, looking askance at you?
Yeah, you know, I guess... I didn't know if I want to say this on the air, but I'm going to go ahead and say it anyway. When I got into the industry and I first got into it, because I came out of a corporate environment and I worked for a large multinational company. I ran the professional audio video division for a company for the United States, and then I got into this industry. And when I talked to my old coworkers, I said, "You just wouldn't believe how unprofessional this industry is." And I said, "I feel like it's really so easy because we bring a very professional approach to what is a fairly non-professional industry." Now, it has been cleaned up so much. And unfortunately, I mean, the intent from the feds was to clean up the industry, and that's what led to a lot of the Dodd-Frank legislation. But unfortunately, what's happened is they've thrown a few babies out with the bathwater. And I don't know the exact numbers, but I'd be willing to bet that 75% of the brokers that were in the business in 2005 are gone. 75%. Those were our biggest, at the time, that was our biggest competition, was other brokers. Now, those brokers are gone. A lot of them went to work for banks. They got lured in with when the banks were hiring and, you know, all this legislation was coming down. And so now our competition is the banks. And I don't want to say anything too derogatory about banks. I bank with one, and they handle my banking just great. But in terms of doing my mortgage there, they just don't have the level of expertise. They don't have the knowledge. They don't have the experience.
And the resources available to them that you have, because you represent how many different lines?
I represent about a dozen different lenders.
I think you told me it was even actually more, but there's a dozen that you
that
work with day to day.
Yeah, we've shopped.
So if I go to the guy at the friendly, you know, the friendly guy at the bank, you know, with the suit on and the smile and everything, he's just... He doesn't have 12 different sources of money.
Oh, here's our money, and here's our rules, and here's our guidelines. And they have something called overlays, Jeff, and a lot of people don't know about these overlays. There's a set of guidelines for Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, and those two guidelines combined are about 2,500 pages. Mm. Now, on top of that, banks do overlays. So they say, you know what, we don't like this particular guideline. We're going to raise the standard for that guideline, and we're going to raise the standard for this guideline. And whereas Fannie says you have to wait 2 years for this event, we're going to make people wait for 4 years before they can qualify for another mortgage. So they make the guidelines, in a lot of cases, even more rigid or more strict. Well, we have a lot of different lenders. I work with some banks, and I work with some companies that are just mortgage companies. They don't have banks. All they do is mortgages. And so they tend to have fewer overlays. And they're also selling directly to Fannie Mae, directly to Freddie Mac. So we have a lot of different sources of companies. So, you know, a lot of my FHA lenders, they only want to go down to 640. That's the norm in the industry. However, we've got a couple that go to 620, a couple that go to 600, who have just more flexible underwriting.
When you deal with these people whose score is 620 or 600, you know, often they're very good people, aren't they? I mean, they're just people who, for one reason or another, they got a lot of debt, or they, you know, I mean, it's very complicated about how a credit score is actually done. People don't understand it. A lot of times they'll say, you know, gee, I don't have any debt. I'm going to have a great credit score because I don't have any debt. And it's not necessarily so.
It is, and it's amazing some of the things you see. One of the loans that, looking back over the last 5 years, one of the hardest loans that we had to do was for a guy that had no credit because he paid cash for everything. Well, heaven forbid that you pay cash for a car or pay cash when you want to buy something. When he came to buy a house, he had no track record of making payments over a period of time. So it's very difficult to get a loan for him.
And yet this guy was as good as gold, you know?
He was gold. He was going to pay everything he did. He paid regularly. People, you know, when you get scores down to 600s, typically you've got a lot of late payments. Sometimes you've got just a high debt-to-credit ratio. In other words, your credit cards have limits of 10,000 and you're using 9,500. That'll drop your score 100 points right there. Unfortunately, one of the biggest things that we see in that lower 600 range is the result of a divorce, where things just went south and one person or the other decided they were going to wreck the other person's credit, or they just weren't keeping their eye on the ball, and we see those types of situations with lower credit scores. Mm. And now they're just gotten a divorce. They're wanting to restart over and buy another house.
Do you sometimes represent both of them?
I actually have got some friends who are now friends that were going through a divorce, and I'm friends with both sides of the couple. Yeah.
You didn't have to take sides and say, you know, we're going to – you know, Amstar is going to side with John, you know, or Mary, or whatever.
No, actually, you know, when I started that particular one, I remember the first person I worked with was the wife in the situation, and through the course, she said, you know what, you probably should talk to my mortgage guy too. He's really doing a good job helping me out. She referred me to her soon-to-be ex-husband, ended up doing her next house, ended up doing his next house, and now I've done her refinance and I've done his refinance. And
look, you've done hundreds and hundreds of mortgages, Randy McMullen. Does it feel good when there's somebody who comes to you and says, you know, I doubt you can help me, but, you know, see what you can do, and then you're able to help them?
We love those phone
calls. Doesn't it feel wonderful, though? Does it feel good for you?
Yeah, those are some of the best calls. Sometimes I just got a call recently for a guy who said he was already turned down at another company, and the reason was he'd gone to a local bank. They had a higher credit score requirement than the regular guideline. And so he didn't meet their requirement, but he did fall within the general parameters of the VA guidelines that he was looking for.
And some of these people, though, if that happens, they think nobody's going to fund them. You know, nobody's going to approve them because, well, the guy at the bank told them.
If the local bank says no, it must be no.
Yeah, but that old banker, you know.
It's just not the case. There's just so much more flexibility, so many more things you can do. And there are more avenues starting to open back up in the market now that are not traditional Fannie and Freddie.
You know, some people don't even know Randy McMullen. My wife was one of them, sorry to say. That mortgage person, like, say, an Amstar mortgage, that's not going to be that's not the lender, so to speak. You deal with the lenders.
Correct.
Okay. So, you know, we got our mortgage from somebody, and then we got a notice from him a few months later, and it was pretty quickly, that he's no longer the lender. Now the lender is, somebody else, some other company. You know, it could be Bank of America. It happens. That's what it was in my particular case. And my wife, you know, she was upset. She goes, you know, this guy just sold the mortgage over to, you know, and I said to her, what do we care who we pay it to? You know?
Well, here's the reality of how that works. Bank of America is not your lender in that particular situation. Almost all banks are doing the same thing, which is they're originating the loan. They're putting together a portfolio of these loans. The loan is actually sold off to Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac. Now, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, they don't have the capabilities to mail payments out to 125 million households every month. So they hire the banks, and it could be
the paperwork
to do what they call the servicing. And so those banks buy the servicing rights for those loans, and they service it. And banks love to service loans because they get to put their advertisement in with every mortgage payment.
All right. So in the example that we gave before, like if somebody goes to the bank and they get their loan from the bank, you know, because they say, well, it's the bank, you know, it must be great. You know, which, given the bad publicity that some of these banks have gotten, by the way, over the years, I still don't understand why people would have that attitude. But suppose they go to the bank and they get the mortgage from the bank. Does that mean that the bank is always going to be the lender?
The bank is rarely ever the lender.
Wow.
The bank is selling the loan usually within 45 days to Freddie Mac or Fannie Mae. Mm. They're just packaging it up and selling it off. And all lenders pretty much do that. Very, very few people. Look, if you're the president of a bank and I'm telling you that I'm going to let you sit on, here's these investments that you're going to get to keep on your books for potentially 30 years at 4.5%.
Yeah.
Now, all of a sudden, 6 years down the road, the cost of money is 6.5%, and you're sitting on millions and millions and millions of dollars at 4.5%. you will not be the president of that bank for very long.
And on that note, that's going to do it for this week's edition of Keeping It Real with Randy McMullen from Amstar Mortgage Network. Randy, in a future show, I want to ask you about this. We can't do it right now because we're out of time, but you know, rates have crept up a little bit. But see, I'm old enough to remember rates that were, upwards of 20%. So to me, I still have to laugh if somebody's loan is 5% or something like that, and they think that, you know, God, I've got a huge rate here. I'm thinking, no, you don't. You know, you go back over history, 5% is a very, very good rate. I know you can probably get people better deals than that, but that's something I want to talk to you about in future shows, Randy. Also, we'll talk about whether FHA is better than conventional, because that's always a hot issue. And then we'll talk about Dodd-Frank, which is something that I have very little understanding of, and I'm going to have to do some research on it.
Yeah, okay.
All right. Again, Randy McMullen from the Amstar Mortgage Network. You can visit amstarloans.com, amstarloans.com, or you can call Randy at 770-509-7827, 770-509-7827. And if you have a remedy for Randy's cough, too, give Randy a call and tell him how to get rid of this.
Thanks, Jim.
All right. Thanks, Randy.
This has been Keeping It Real with Randy McMullen. Brought to you by Amstar Mortgage Network, NMLS number 148016. Come back next week as Randy McMullen interviews the people important to you for getting a mortgage and preparing to buy or sell a home. For more information, visit AmstarLoans.com and tune in each Friday at noon for Keeping It Real with Randy McMullen, only on News Talk 1160, the talk of the town.